Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, host of Dynasty Game Night. My co-host John Bosch and I created this podcast for one reason, to focus on fun. After all, fun is the reason we all started playing fantasy football in the first place. I love games of all sorts, card games, board games, video games, really any kind of game you can think of. So one day, John and I decided it was time for a podcast where we just play games. You might learn something along the way, but you won't find much hard-hitting analysis here. Check out all the other incredible podcasts DLF has to offer for that sort of thing. On Dynasty Game Night, our primary focus is to entertain. So if you like playing games or watching game shows, this might just be the podcast for you. We'd love for you to give it a listen and play along with the contestants and maybe even win a chance to be on the show.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win if I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. I'ma win as a turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russell
Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Rocky Pichella, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Justin Rogers, and I also have a trading problem.
And I'm Jordan McNamara, and I have a trading problem.
Hey there, everybody. As you heard in the introductions there, there's no Russ, no Dynasty Outhouse tonight. But very excited to be potting with these two guys here. I haven't potted with them before, so looking forward to it, especially got a great guest, but also you, Justin. I've been looking forward to this. You're always very active in the Cool Kids Club. I call you the devil's advocate because you're always stirring up debates. So. but how you doing, Justin?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Knocked out a run, so I can enjoy some beer and chit chat a little bit. So
yeah,
it's nice.
Right there with you. And as I said, we have a great guest here tonight as well, from Football Guys and author of The Analytics of Dynasty, Jordan McNamara. Jordan, how's it going?
It's going good, guys. It's good to join you. It's been a busy day, so it's been quite the week. So it's good to be here.
Yeah, definitely gives us a lot to talk about tonight. And Jordan is a return guest, so for the first time in a while, we don't need to go through the whole introductory interview. So I guess we'll get right into the news, which of course is, free agency tampering period open today. But first we'll get to a couple things that happened yesterday before. This I especially wanted to talk about with Jordan, because I can't think of anybody that I've heard talk about A.J. Dillon more. And so Aaron Jones re-signing with Green Bay yesterday, 4 years. 48 million. I think they can get out after a couple. But Jordan, what are your thoughts on this, and how you feeling about AJ Dillon now?
So it's complicated. Would sort of be my initial answer, and I don't. This is going to sound like a cop out, but I don't fully know yet. And part of that is, there's a real good chance this deal looks more like a 1 year deal than we expect it to look. And I'll just say with that, there's a lot of risk in that. And so one of the things when I look at running backs, I am looking at basically, and I have a tiering system at Analytics of Dynasty. I essentially tier guys in levels of comfort. And if this looks a lot like a 1 year deal, which we don't know the full numbers yet. I was just checking on it to see if anything came out, and I haven't seen anything yet. But Green Bay's tendency is to basically give the guarantee in the amount of the signing bonus. And if that's true and only 13 of this $48 million is guaranteed, it's a year-to-year deal, which, that's a lot different than it being 4 years, $48 million with, you know, 35 of that guaranteed. That looks a lot different for these players. So that's, I think, the initial thing. And, you know, this is a been a fun week to see people overreact on all fronts. That would be the caveat that I would say. I don't have the full information yet. It obviously doesn't help AJ Dillon. The interesting thing is I have the real draft tracker, which I'm able to sort of extrapolate and tell us what sort of the market thinks about, the hit rates on these guys. And the market had AJ Dillon up to being like a 62% hit rate guy, which is pretty good. And it essentially, said that Aaron Jones was going to walk. It's essentially what the market was saying. So yeah. It's interesting that got a little overheated. And I think for the right reasons. I wrote in a Football Guys article that came out, what's today? Today's Monday. It came out on, I think, Sunday morning. And I wrote it over the weekend. And I said, I think the chances of Aaron Jones coming back are remote just because the math didn't make sense, right? Like, they could have tagged him for less than they signed him a year. It didn't make any sense. Unless that there's, they basically did a 1 year, year to year deal, and it spread it out over a couple years in terms of the cap hit, right? That's, I think, makes a lot more sense. So that whole thing never made much sense to me and why they did this, unless there's more to the deal. So I'm open to different ideas. You know, with AJ Dillon, does this hurt his stock? No doubt. But does this sort of, like, yeah, would it have been nice to have AJ Dillon come from like 210 in a rookie draft last year to be my week one starter in 2021? Yeah, that would have been great. But I look at profiles, and that profile is one that I want to invest in, which is one injury away running back, which now that Jamal Williams has essentially said that he's gone from Green Bay, we sort of know that. And that's a really asymmetric bet. So I find it kind of funny that these people are taking victory laps. You know, no one gave two flying thoughts about Mike Davis this time last year, or yeah, Giovanni Bernard this time last year, or Wayne Gallman this time last year. And we could go on and on and on. And we can go back years when it was Damian Williams, and when it was Raheem Mostert, when it was Tim Hightower, and all these guys that came from the ether that won people lots of money. Those things are absolutely still possible for Dillon. So I would just caution in terms of overreacting, you know, overreacting on the positive side and overreacting on the negative side, because his league winning range of outcomes is still firmly in play. And it's probably not from week one, but, you know, and here's the thing with Aaron Jones is if, like, again, I never wish injury on anyone. This is what I'm doing, but just to lay out something. If Aaron Jones blows out his knee at week two, kind of like Barkley did last year, like, AJ Dillon could be like a league winner. And if that contract isn't really guaranteed past this year, like, never be a threat to AJ Dillon again. Right. So those things I think we have to be cautious on until we know the full numbers and get the full idea, because there's a lot of risk in being on the Aaron Jones side of it right now. And it's essentially, you know, the floor is low on a weekly basis for AJ Dillon, but I think there's could be some ceiling there that maybe the market's not pricing in, because they tend to underprice these situations, typically the backup running backs.
So it sounds like you can go, Justin.
Oh, I was just going to say that all of that leads into now I think AJ Dillon could be a buy. But
what I was going to get to, yeah.
It's really owner specific though, because if you got a guy who just traded the 107 for him a week ago, there's no chance that you're getting him for the 205, 208, whatever. But if you find the guy who drafted him at 203, 204 last year, and he's super disappointed because his lottery ticket didn't pay off, maybe you can buy him for, you know, mid to late second. You know, you can find that kind of upside play without spending an arm and a leg. I mean, there's no way you're paying a first for AJ Dillon now, but I don't see why a late second is any different for him now than then. As to the contract thing, Jordan, if it's a 2 year deal, like if it becomes like, you know, $24 million guaranteed, you know, so they guarantee another $9 million on top of the signing bonus, or $11 million on top of the signing bonus, that kind of worries me, because then you're looking at him possibly being out in a year where AJ Dillon will be a 25-year-old contract running back. So then you're getting 1 year and who knows what his future is, that kind of thing. So I think it's very contract specific as to the guarantees and what your value is for AJ Dillon long term.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other big takeaway for me was just that I kind of agree with I think I saw Izzy point this out of being a little wary about trading this time of year, especially for a guy like that. Like you said,
yeah.
People were giving up the 107, just assuming Aaron Jones would leave. I think with that kind of price tag, it was basically baked in that Aaron Jones was leaving. So in situations like this, I generally prefer to wait it out until March or April. And
right.
You're only paying a marginal amount more to get, I think, A.J. Dillon once Aaron Jones does leave, if that had been what happened.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a lot of risk to be buying running backs before free agency starts and before you know where landing spots are. You know, at that price, you're getting someone for a second and then it hits, sure. But if you're already paying, you know, Travis Etienne prices, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, when you're like Jordan, who was drafting him in the late second round last year, that's different than paying a 107 for him this year because you think what's going to happen. But we'll get into the next piece of news, which is that Breeze retired yesterday, which, you know, the Breeze himself I'm not specifically concerned about. But just before we came on, and also, I guess, yesterday, Taysom had the fake years added on, which I believe we all think is just a cap gimmick, doesn't mean anything. But also Jameis, just before we came on, re-signed. I haven't seen any contract terms. But I'm very intrigued by that. I have quite a few Jameis shares. I really like him going forward if he does end up the starter, which I do think he will. It'll probably be, I don't think he's going to get a big contract, so he's not going to have the security of some of the other quarterbacks. But
it's a 1 year, up to $12 million.
That's what I figured. That's what they were kind of saying yesterday.
The incentive laden. He got basically the same kind of money that Taysom was already being paid.
Yeah, so. But I don't think he's coming back to be Taysom. There's a difference between being Taysom's backup and being Drew Brees' backup.
Absolutely.
So what do you think about Jameis going forward then? Do you agree you think he's probably the starter for the Saints offense?
I don't think that they would even bring him back at $12 million if they didn't want to start him. So they already had Taysom under contract. They reworked that deal and spread that base salary into a signing bonus and spread it over several years. So, $2.5 million versus $9 million or whatever it was this year is the reason that he got that big number. But as far as, they couldn't cut Taysom. His money was guaranteed already.
Right.
But they didn't have to give Jameis $12 million unless they thought, okay, well, maybe he's a much better option. And to me, he is a much better option. I don't think there's any question. Now, is it going to be good for the Saints? I don't know. But it'd be great for the fantasy options.
That's what I was going to say. I think, whether in terms of real life, the Saints, we'll see how those interceptions pan out after a year under Peyton.
Not to mention their defense is having to cut like half of the players because their cap situation is so dire. Everyone says the cap is, the cap is fake, the cap isn't real, but have you looked at what the Saints had to do to get to where they are right now? It's ugly.
And Jerm, what's your thought on that whole situation?
I mean, what I said earlier, and I mean, Jameis Winston is a career 7.7 yards per attempt quarterback. And he has an 8.2 yards per attempt season on his resume and a 5,100 yard season on his resume. Those things don't grow on trees. And is the interception number bad? Yeah. I don't think, like, if you look at that, I'd have to go back and look, and that's not really my thing in terms of, breaking down the tape and what were the mistakes. The number was a little bit high, but it's not like so outrageously extreme outside of his normal ranges of outcomes. Yeah, it was more than he had. And would you like his interceptions to be lower? Sure. But yeah, he did. I mean, he threw the ball a lot more than he had thrown it at any point in his career too. So that's kind of why the interception numbers were up. Yeah, the rate was up. But I mean, some of that stuff can be fluky too. What's interesting to me is, and I can't wrap my head around it. I say in one breath, like 5,100 yards and 7.7 yards per attempt don't grow on trees, but it doesn't look like the NFL thinks the same thing.
Right.
Which is, I think you have to update, right? You have to take that information and sort of recalibrate. And so when you get this information about players that's different than what you think, I think it should force you to rethink that. So we were talking beforehand, you know, I have Jameis and Taysom stacked on a couple of teams, right? I think I have an answer there. I'm not necessarily sure at this particular point which one it is. I think it's, and I think the market thinks this. I did some Twitter polls today, which you guys helped me out with. Thank you. It's, you know, about 2-1. The market thinks it's Jameis over Taysom Hill. But I think it was 14th, 15th round. I took Taysom Hill. I mean, it's like quarterback 38 or something right. like that. Like, I mean, the talk about asymmetric bets. I mean, you have a run first quarterback who was actually better than people thought last year. You know, better than the perception is what he was last year. Like, I don't know. I think that's a pretty high upside, you know, very low risk type of stack between the two of them.
I got a question for you, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Since you own both of them, who would you prefer as the week one starter for your Jameis. Fantasy roster?
Jameis.
You'd rather have Jameis?
Yeah, because and it's funny because I had him stacked and I said, right, I think the answer, if you said, give me the over-under of a half of how many starters do I have out of the two of them this year, I think it's definitely the over. But there was the chance that it was two and not just one. And so that was a situation I sat there and I said, do I want to move off of this? And I said, well, I kind of have one in the hand, but like, there's a chance that I don't need to necessarily pick one right now. And I'm not necessarily sure even if Jameis resigns, if I'm going to be able to pick one then either. You know, I don't know right now for sure. But I have two bullets to fire and, you know, fortunately they're third and fourth quarterbacks for me. So, it's not super, you know, it's not super critical to figure out right now. They're fine where they sit. I think Jameis has, you know, a long-term career starter in him still. I'm not sure that Taysom Hill has that in his range of outcomes. So give me the Winston with the hope that he, you know, he can ride it. And plus, I mean, talk about a situation to go into. I mean, you have a guy who was hurt last year, but it was on a Hall of Fame track before that in Michael Thomas, and you've got Kamara. And you know, you have some other pieces there in Troutman, and you have a coach that is able to get it out of a quarterback. I mean, and he sat behind Breeze for a year, right? I mean, you know, I think that there's some optimism there, I think, for sure, in terms of Jameis going forward for me.
Yeah, agreed. And I definitely think the Peyton thing could be big as well. I mean, I think 2 years ago, you know, Arians just wanted him to chuck the ball. I mean, he didn't want 30 interceptions, but Arians' offense generally works that way, where he's throwing the ball deep. He's not. You've seen other Arians quarterbacks with high interception totals, and that was just like squared with Jameis because he already had some issues before Arians got there. So
And don't forget too, the thing I always come back with Jameis is who would know him really well. It'd be the Saints.
Right.
They played against them a lot.
Yeah. Right.
So in terms of like the fact that what they saw in playing him and prepping for him and all of those things, like no doubt that goes into their consideration on whether or not to sign him. Right. I mean, that's all that intelligence that they had gathered. You know, there's no doubt that that's part of their calculus. So, I mean, that's something too, that this isn't just you know, pick a bad franchise that would make stupid decisions. You know, this isn't I'm not going to pick on anyone, you know, in the Windy City or anything like that, but this isn't that situation. This is a much, I think, more sound decision-making franchise that would use that information. So I think that tells you something too.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's a good sign too. They had him in the building for a year and wanted to bring him mm-hmm. back. And that he wanted to come back knowing that, you know, the Bears need a starting quarterback. The Washington football team needs a starting quarterback. I'm sure he hasn't been assured anything, but I'm sure he definitely thinks he's going to be the starter if he's signing.
With a 1 year deal, it's kind of the perfect opportunity for him to make a big payday. You know, he wasn't going to get 5 years, $100 million. Coming out of, you know, being a backup and that right. interception season. But if he goes out there and throws for 4,300 yards, 26 touchdowns, and can limit his interception total to 10 or 12, he's going to get paid. Like, paid.
Especially, you know, if the cap bounces back to normal next year.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a lot of teams with a lot of room under the cap next year. I mean, it's going to look completely different than this year. So all these 1 year deals are exactly what you'd expect out of these mid tier free agents. whether it's a, you know, a $12 million quarterback or a $4 million running back, you know, like that just makes sense. So, cause next year when the cap bounces back, assuming that everything is like it is, you know, TV deals and all, there's going to be like, it's just going to be, you know, raining on folk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into some of the other things that happened today. New England Patriots spending like drunken sailors on all sorts of people, including at least one fantasy relevant guy and one offensive player. Janu signs a 4-year deal with the Patriots, and they also signed Nelson Aguilar to a 2-year, $26 million deal. Obviously I think Janu's the more interesting one. He's one of the, I think him and Henry were probably the two big tight end names on the market. And everyone always loves the, you know, tight end X going to New England. So Jordan, what do you think of Janu in New England?
His career high in receiving yards for a season is 448. Pretty amazing. And if you sort of look at the other comp that I would have to him, Gerald Everett, it's basically been the same player through 4 years, and you're going to get a pretty big discount on that. That's pretty interesting to me. So I don't know. I think when I sort of look at these guys, I sort of look in. With tight ends, I look towards, you know, what they've basically done in their career. That's a really big indication. So with running back, it's, you know, what you've done, but also the team commitment. You know, in this situation, it's much more of what you, in a tight end situation, it's really what have you done. When you look at the prior examples of Jonnu Smith, which is round 3 draft pick without a hit through 4 years in his NFL career, 6.25% of those guys hit for a future top 24 seasonal finish. The market likes that almost 10 times that. So there's a huge disconnect here in terms of profile versus market value. I'll take I think a big breakout for him is probably pretty rare at this point. So again, if he's going to be valued, you know, right now I have him, our real draft position has him 15th in terms of where he's going. I imagine that would go up, in terms, like I'd imagine his price improves. But again, anything, you're getting to a dangerous spot where there's not a lot of comps for him to have this late career breakout. So I'd be pretty cautious on that. And like I said, wherever Gerald Everett signs, like that's going to be a really interesting one, because it's going to be, you know, rounds and rounds and rounds cheaper. And they're kind of similar. They're very, very similar profiles at this point.
I was just going to say, I like that point. I have a lot of Everett shares, and he's a guy I've already thought was a sneaky buy going into this free agent season. But what were your thoughts, Justin?
Well, the difference between Everett and Janu is that we've seen Janu with the opportunity and he hadn't panned out. He's been the starter and had the lion's share of the snaps and hasn't panned. Look, this is the fact that we lead with Janu and Nelson Aguilar is really underwhelming. Like, it's just like, you know, everyone was talking about this free agent class, but then all the running backs signed extensions in the summer. And then even Aaron Jones gets his extension done before anything else really happens. So now we're looking at Kenny Galladay, Juju Smith-Schuster, and I'm to the end of the list of people that I really give a shit about. So, I mean, it's bad. We're all looking for the big haymaker. And the fact that people think that the Patriots won with what they did today, it blows my mind. You know, they had a bunch of money to spend and they're just throwing it around. But I don't think they're making significant moves that are going to, you know, be fantasy relevant by any means, because I'm not a Janu believer. I really, really was high on Janu going into last season, expecting him to have that kind of breakout season, fourth year, finally the unquestioned starter, and it just didn't happen. So I own him in a lot of places, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to sell him real soon now with that New England bump.
Right, I agree with you. I definitely think he's a sell, especially if his value takes the bump we all think it will, because I'm not sure the production is going to match that. And it's funny, too. I saw someone had tweeted out earlier today that they were getting 2011 Eagles vibes from what the Patriots did today. I don't know if anybody besides me remembers the dream team, Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. And then, yeah, Vince Young and then Jason Babin and a whole bunch of other, Ronnie those Brown.
those were actually good, accomplished NFL players. This is Nelson Aguilar and Jonnu Smith, like a wide receiver four and a back end tight end, like a mid tier tight end two. I mean, I don't know.
Well, they signed some defensive guys too.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But we'll get to the other, as Justin says, not super exciting things before we move on to listener questions and trades. I guess this might be the biggest name of today, which was Corey Davis signing with the Jets. I'm not in love with that spot. It's either Sam Darnold or a rookie. You know, it was nice what Davis did last year. I'm not sure it's going to happen with the Jets. Jordan, do you have any hopes for anything beyond what we saw or even what we saw last year with Corey Davis going to the Jets?
Yeah, so Corey Davis smashed last year in terms of his efficiency stuff. And so when you look at, you know, one of the things I'm really big on in terms of evaluating players is yards per route run. It's a PFF metric where it's how many yards, receiving yards did you have essentially per opportunity? 2.58. That's a smashing, smashing success for Corey Davis. And that's just a huge efficiency number. Only saw 90 targets. So that's the other thing when you look at it and you say, all right, well, the lifeblood of receiver production, to quote the seminal work on the topic, is from RotoViz, is targets. And so when you know, when I look at this, I want receivers that have a lot of targets. And I think one thing that if you're trying to look for an edge or look for a place where the market can be miscalibrated, it's worrying about quarterbacks in terms of how they affect wide receivers, because what you're ultimately worried about is how many targets you get. And that's right. That is the most predictive thing by far. And, you know, some of the efficiency stuff that we see are, you know, oh, this quarterback's really good for wide receivers. Like, that stuff's very fluky year to year. What you really want is a big target number. And I think that, you know, in this situation, I think that there's that potential, and I'm not sure who the quarterback's going to be. We'll find that out. But this is a cautionary note on when you look at these guys like Denzel Mims. You know, when you look at these guys that don't have significant draft pedigree, which day two is not significant draft pedigree. When you look at these guys, like, there is a lot of risk there. So looking at other guys that fit that mold, like T. Higgins is one that people really love right now that I would just caution folks on, because like, there's a really good chance that they bring in additional competition in the form of a first round draft pick. And that can really, really harm valuations. And, you know, historically, there's about a 20% shot that happens to him. And if you're valuing him as highly as some people are, this is a good example of how dangerous that can be.
You're lucky Russ is not here with that T. Higgins slander, but
he might have muted you right there.
I know.
Well, he's Team Clemson big wide receiver for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you think of Corey Davis to the Jets? You basically agree with what Jordan's saying? Or
I like the move a lot. I do. I don't know if Darnold is going to be a legit quarterback, but I think this is an opportunity where he can get 110, 115 targets. You know, and if you're looking at that kind of volume, Jamison Crowder has a dead cap hit of $1 million and he's owed 11.3. This is the kind of signing that'll make him expendable. And if they go ahead and drop Jamison Crowder and you're looking at someone, you know, 118 targets last year, or a pace of 118 targets, he had 89 in 12 games. So can I get that kind of action on Corey Davis? I'm all about it. I mean, I'm really excited. I think Corey Davis is one of those guys that's never going to be, you know, 150 targets and 15 or even 1,200, 1,300 yards. But I'll take him as my wide receiver four in a situation where he's going to, you know, maybe get 70, 75 catches and, you know, cracks 1,000 yards and, you know, a handful of touchdowns. That's fine by me.
You know? Yeah, and you can get, you know, close to what you got last year. That's a pretty good season.
Right, especially when he's, you know, a guy that I picked up in like the 22nd round of a startup last year. You know, like that kind of round, you know, that kind of.
Oh, yeah. He was dead to the world prior to last year. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I incorporate a little data I just got? We were talking about this before the show. I tweeted out, does Corey Davis signing with the New York Jets increase or decrease Davis's dynasty valuation? It's updating as we speak here. It's like the big board on election night. 37.3% increase in valuation, 30.6 decrease. So you see, you know, about 7% positive, 32% say no. So that's, you know, pretty neutral. So, I think there's a fair split there. And I think there's probably people on both sides of this argument. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And if you're pro Davis, you know, like you guys, based off the target thing, sounds like it's still a decent buying opportunity. Like people aren't bumping him up from this move. And if you like the target, the potential target increase, it might be a chance to get him still, you know, not too expensive.
All I know is Adam Gase isn't the coach there anymore. All I need to know about the Jets.
That's a bump in itself. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Holy cow. You know, Darnold for MVP.
Everyone after they get away from Gase, you know, Tannehill.
No, it'll probably be Fields or Wilson, but that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last note we put on here for the show sheet of the free agent things, I mentioned the Hyde to the Jags, not so much because of anybody cares about Carlos Hyde, but this just seems to me to be wheels up on James Robinson that this is the competition they're going to, you know, not competition, but the backup support they're going to bring in. We all knew there was no way they weren't going to bring somebody in. His workload last year is ridiculous, and Zigbo and Agumbawale are, you know, non-factors in the NFL. So they were going to bring somebody. And if you were going to bring somebody, this is the perfect guy, like if you're a James Robinson owner, to have them bring in. He will get some, you know, carries and some time, but not anyone you're really worried about. It doesn't preclude them from doing something in the draft, but I've always kind of thought they weren't going to spend significant draft capital on a running back. So, Justin, you on board the James Robinson train with me?
I am. And what this means to me is if this is their, you know, their quote unquote big running back signing, what it means is they view James Robinson as a three down back, because they're not about to pull him off for Carlos Hyde on third down.
No.
So you've still got that opportunity for receptions, which he was, you know, I mean, a great PPR back last year, unexpectedly great. And then, he's still going to be a two down banger on the front side. I mean, he's not a small guy. So you give him that opportunity. And no one was expecting him to get 23, 25 touches a game again. You know, like that's just not happening in today's NFL, but maybe it gives him a little bit more, you know, longevity, a little bit more endurance to the season where he's not getting killed, you know, and plus I'm assuming the offense is going to get a little better with Trevor Lawrence. So yeah, wheels up. Let's go.
And any thoughts on Robinson before we move on to the next segment with Jordan?
Is this the first running back edition or the last running back edition? That's the question. That's the question. And they've talked about it. They've sent mixed messages on this. I'll just say low pedigree guys. Like I think Robinson, it's interesting because when you look at Robinson's like hit rate, so I use something I call density. And that's basically, you know, once you hit, which he has for a top 24 seasonal finish, sort of what does your career look like after that in terms of odds of hitting? Now, if you sort of look at the UDFA arc, it looks a lot like a second round incoming rookie pick, second round NFL draft pick in terms of running backs. So that's kind of what you're looking at. I think the thing that you don't have – the problem with owning James Robinson is you're always going to have this question, right? This is going to be your life, and it can pay off for sure. But this is kind of the life that you're going to live in terms of asking yourself these questions. You know, can he be the guy? Absolutely. He's shown that. Is the team going to fully invest with a new coaching staff? And you know, there's a lot of moving pieces there. And when there's a lot of moving pieces, the guys that get hurt are the guys that have low pedigree historically. So is this the first or the last? I think that's the big question in terms of this signing.
As we've seen, the assumption, as Russ likes to say, of rational coaching and GMing can be dangerous, as we saw with Green Bay.
Yeah, no kidding.
And Aaron Jones. But in a rational sense, I just don't see, even if they add somebody else, if it's a draft, like I can't see them adding even a day two guy would surprise me at this point. I just don't think that there's going to be any I agree. There could be a third guy, but it could just be some sort of pass catching back, which wouldn't be great. Like as Justin said, it looks like as of right now, James Robinson is still a three down guy. But I just don't think I've said all along, I don't think they're going to add anyone significant. Hyde certainly doesn't qualify as that. Really beyond the top three or four running backs. I think most of the running backs in this class don't qualify as that. So, will be interesting to see, but, I feel pretty good about him for 2021, but you're right. It's going to be a year to year thing with James Robinson. I guess the idea would be to maybe if his career plays out like Chris Carson, you get, you know, a good 3 to 4 years out of him in that general low end one range.
This kind of relates back to the AJ Dillon talk where you know, you don't buy the running back right now when there's still so much to be learned. But at this point, his price is not going to change. It's not going to go up from where it is because it's already baked in that he's going to be the unquestioned starter. You know, there's going to be depth pieces added. But so if they add somebody, his price only goes down and you get him cheaper. If they don't add anybody, you buy him for the same price in 2 weeks that you did that you would today. So there's no reason to buy him right now. That's for sure.
That's a good point.
Just a quick close the loop on Carlos Hyde. His head coach in college, Urban Meyer. So just for what that's
a long time ago, man. I was having this conversation with someone else earlier. Like I don't talk to my college coaches from, you know, however many years ago. And pretty much as soon as I was gone, it was like, all right, peace, I'll see you later. So it's not this long standing relationship where they're having dinner on Saturday nights and stuff. It's just whatever.
Maybe.
Okay, so let's get into it. We did get a couple of listener questions. We'll go to them, and then we'll go finish. We have a bunch of trades, so we'll use them to close out the show. So the first listener question came from Dynasty Dada Head at Dada_Head. What 2020 rookie wide receiver that had an underwhelming 2020 season are you most excited for in 2021 and beyond? And I'll let you guys go in a second. My initial thought on this was maybe the answer should be none of them, because I think in general, everybody always wants to tout buying low the guys who don't do anything. And I think in general, it doesn't really pan out most of the time. I mean, we have DJ Chark from a couple of years ago, but it depends on what threshold you use for doing anything, quote unquote. But I maybe you have some data on this, Jordan. I'm guessing you probably do somewhere, if not on hand. But I'm just curious. Like, yeah, I think the hit rate. It seems to me for all the DJ Sharks we have, there's a ton of N'Keal Harrys and James Washingtons and Anthony Millers and things like that that we never see much from again. And it seems like everybody always wants to tout these guys to buy them low or. A Jay Jaw is another one after their bad rookie season. And to me, it seems they often don't pan out, but I don't have the data to back that up. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So you can tell. So I have something that I call base rates, which is essentially you look at a player's NFL draft pedigree and you know what they did to date. And so I just use a simple metric of whether or not they've produced a top 24 seasonal finish. And that gives you an idea, an approximate number going forward about, hey, here's like a starting point on how to think about these guys. So when you look at guys in the category of first rounders last year that have not hit, so those include, and again, it's top 24 seasonal finish. So those actually, it does include Brandon Ayuk. I think he's not in this conversation because I don't think he was a disappointment. But you have Jerry Jeudy, Rager and Ruggs in there. It's a 40% going forward, right? 40% odds going forward that they produce a top 24 seasonal finish in their career. I think the interesting thing when you sort of look at the flip side of them is what's their value situation look like? So when a first round wide receiver has dropped in valuation after year one from their startup ADP in their rookie season, the first round wide receivers, 30% of them return to what their startup valuation was in their rookie season the next year, right? So basically, I call it a rebound rate, right? What's the odds that you basically, you start at year one, you drop in year two, and then you go back above what your value was in year one and your third year. It's only 30%. So that essentially matches what you would expect in terms of, all right, if you're not projecting this guy to hit this year to be a top 24 seasonal guy, you're probably going to be in a falling knife situation, right? That's probably what you're going to be in. So you really have to think critically about if the person's going to get to that high threshold. If I could get out on the guys where I bought them last year, in terms of Judy, in terms of Rager specifically, if I can get out what I paid, I would do it. If I'm taking a huge, and I think you're taking kind of a loss right now, there's, I think, ways that you could sort of craft that deal to sort of get back what you paid. And if you can do that, I would do it. Reset the clock. If you told me I had to pick one about, going forward, I mean, I still like the Rager profile, but there's questions there, and a lot of it comes down to, I think there's some dysfunction there. And I'm not sure that you're going to see a scenario where someone's going to funnel him 110, 120 targets. I mean, I thought coming out he was Brandon Cooks, but Brandon Cooks has played with like a whole lot of Hall of Fame quarterbacks at this point. So, Rager, not so much with Jalen Hurts. So that's the concern that I have. I still like the player. And I think Judy, I mean, if they had a quarterback that had his head screwed on right, the problem is I just don't know what the target volume ever is going to be like for Judy. But I think the guy can play to some degree. I just don't know what the fantasy upside of it is because their offense has a bunch of guys that can generate a bunch of targets, but not a particularly good quarterback to sustain the offense. So that's kind of the rub there with Judy.
And Justin, who did you have a receiver in mind for this question?
I was going right to Jerry Judy. here's something for you. So I was having this conversation last year with Scott Connor, who's super into stats and market value and ADP movement. And, I looked up ADP for first round wide receivers and those who got 600 yards or more. And I believe that Jerry Jeudy will be the first wide receiver that has had 600 yards receiving that is going to drop in ADP. And he has. That's a massive buy to me. I mean, I don't know that 856 yards in a rookie season is a miss. I don't see that being a miss. I think that our standards are different because we've got Justin Jefferson out there smashing and CeeDee Lamb looking like he's going to be great. But it's kind of like the Tua comparison. Like Tua wasn't bad his rookie season. He just wasn't Justin Herbert. And if you look at what he did on a per game basis, because he didn't start the season, under center. But for me, if I'm going to get another 115 targets from Jerry Jeudy, I'm expecting his catch rate to go up. I don't expect his catch rate to be 48, 49%, whatever. If he even gets to a reasonable 60% catch rate, you're talking about, 65, 70 catches. Okay, cool. I'm good. I'm down with that. So I'll take that. And then I hope that Drew Lock gets replaced soon. And then we can expect even more volume and more efficiency. But I think that there's going to be some growth. He had an almost 9% drop rate this year, and that's not his game. I think he might have been just a little overwhelmed by the NFL game in his rookie season, and there's going to be some correction on that.
You not worried about the return of Sutton and if Fan has a full healthy season?
I actually think that generally good offenses benefit players. So I don't – there was going to be someone getting targets anyway. It's not like it was going to be Sutton and Fant and no one else. If Drew Lock is going to throw for 480, 500 passes this season, I mean, I don't think that 110, 115 is outrageous by any means. Now you get 110 to him, 125, 130 to Cortland Sutton, and 90 or 100 to Noah Fant. Well, you still have a couple hundred to go. So it doesn't seem crazy to me.
Yeah, my only pushback on that would be, is if your threshold of success is going to be someone gets 110 targets, like you're shooting too low, right? Because that's just not going to sustain anything that matters in terms of fantasy. So you know, the odds of it truly moving any sort of needle, that's firmly in a wide receiver three tier where you can pay a lot cheaper to sort of masquerade that. And so that's the rub. I sort of get your point there on, hey, he can sort of get to that threshold, but you really need more than that. And I think at his cost, it's baking in that he's going to get more than that. And that's really the rub that I would have with Judy at this point.
Yeah, and that's fair for 2021. I just expect that Drew Lock won't be around, maybe not even this season, but certainly not the next year. Like, he's going to be replaced in a heartbeat. So, I mean, but if you're looking at, you know, Jerry Jeudy was 23rd in the league in targets last year. You know, everyone expects these guys to get 130, 140 targets, but that just doesn't happen that often. So, I mean, I think 115 targets is plenty for a wide receiver too. With increased efficiency, you know, he's got to actually catch the ball, but you know,
yeah, and I think, like I said, to me, there's not any guy that disappointed that I really love going forward. One other guy that we haven't mentioned, I was looking at a little bit, maybe was Pittman, who I did like coming out, and I do expect them though to probably sign a free agent wide receiver. I think a lot of people do. Maybe if it's not Galladay or Juju, Pittman still can command a decent target share there. But he's the only guy. But really, like I said, I'm not in love with any of the guys. I mean, of the guys that didn't, you know, hit fairly big. Just based on what we've been talking about. And like you said, Jordan, as an Eagles fan, there's definitely a lot of dysfunction here. So I have some worries about Rager, and I also expect them to go with some sort of receiving weapon, at number six. And maybe an offensive lineman or maybe a trade down, but, I think that, you know, that could affect his target share as well. So, we'll move on to the next question though. Which is from Kelly Poor at KP Poker KP. How do you value picks more than a year out? I'm not in love with the 22 class, but I'm very intrigued by the 23 class. How much of a discount should I be getting by waiting 2 years? And I'm going to go to you again first, Jordan, because I'm pretty sure I've heard you talk about, you know, future rookie picks before. This, he's talking specifically 2 years out rather than just a random 22. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, I wrote about this in the 2021 edition of the Analytics of Dynasty. And I think generally speaking, for a lot of reasons, I think picks are undervalued. That is, I know, a loaded statement, and there's caveats abound in sort of the way I think about it. Generally speaking, and actually the research I did in this was actually a trade addicts league. Generally speaking, when you look at the perception of the picks for a team, generally speaking, the GMs overvalue the picks. So what I mean by that is when someone trades away a future first, generally what they're saying is it's going to be a later pick. And so one of the things that I found when I actually did the research was, you know, you just ask people what the odds of, you know, the odds of them winning the championship are. And, you know, I had the responses. It ended up being something to the effect of, I think it was like 23%, 24%, something like that. Just short of 2/3, maybe 22%, something like that. Just short of, you know, the 24 threshold there. But when you add it up, it ends up being about 2.5. The math ended up being about 2.5 times more likely, the total estimated, championship odds than exist, right? It was like 250%. And you know, that's saying something about the value of picks, which is that people are generally valuing them later in the draft. So I, you know, that's one thing when you're buying picks. People tend to sell them as the perception that they're later. So I do think they have upside. The other thing too is when you're just estimating random picks, which anything more than a couple months in advance, you should definitely think is random. That is absolutely one thing I would give you advice on this. It's a 2022 pick right now. Just place it as a random pick because, you know, when people say, oh, it's a late pick, like, All right, if that person loses in the first round of the playoffs, that's 107, right, which isn't right. a late pick. And that's assuming that they make the playoffs. So those picks are very, very much random. And one thing I'll say is, you know, I did this. And I think that the upside of this is really great. The other thing that I would say is, and I'll sort of tell you why in a second, figure out a way to target that player or target the person you're trading with. And what I mean by that is, you know, I did this trade and I did it, with Damian Williams, and it would have been, what's it, 2021. So it would have been 2019, like the fall or the end of summer 2019, just leading up to the season. That was after Damian Williams basically got, you know, it was a huge, was huge in the playoffs and then, you know, survived the pre-draft process. And it was like July when I made the deal, and I couldn't, for the life of me, I couldn't get a 2020 pick. I was looking for a 2020 first. I was looking for a first, and I couldn't get a 2020 first. So I said, you know, I'll take a 2021 first. Let's structure a deal that way. Mm-hmm. And what I did was, is I said, okay, I'm going to get a discount on that because people are willing to, you know, are willing to pay out, you know, are willing to part with those picks a little bit easier. And so I can get some more on top of it. So what I did was, and this was great because, the odds that Damian Williams is going to be productive and make that 2021 pick really late are super low, just in terms of his pedigree and where he was going to come from in the draft. Like, guys hitting for 2 or 3 years from the depths of which he was coming from in startups just do not happen. So it was a really good bet in terms of he wasn't going to help that pick be late. And I also, again, it didn't end up mattering much because of the person got injured, but I got back in the deal AJ Green, and the person that was most likely to impact the value of that pick was AJ Green. Historically, again, he got hurt and it didn't end up mattering. But I was able to essentially trade him a player that wasn't going to help that pick be late. And right. at the same time, take back someone that, that conceivably could have been, right? So I basically, I sort of let him walk through the near term door and took what I was hoping would be a longer term asset. Again, it didn't end up, it wouldn't have mattered either way. That was the bet that I was making. And it ended up working out because, you know, I waited 2 years and now I have Trevor Lawrence in my pocket if I want him, right? Cause that's 101. And I'll just say, like, when you have those picks sort of coming down the line, it gives you a lot of options, right? So have it, it's not a roster spot that's taken up. And there's a lot of value to it. And so again, at any point between then that moment that I made that trade, until I make the pick, I can trade it. And if I was trying to go for a stretch run in 2020, I could have used it. And at that point, we would have known it was going to be really good. You know, and I ended up being a fringe playoff team. I ended up not making the playoffs in the league, so I held on to the pick. But I had a lot of options with that pick, and basically all of them were good. And so I do think that they have really huge upside. And so when you look at those picks, the other thing I think that people make a mistake on is the random pick, it's typically earlier, right? So if you just look at a random pick, it's not the middle of the round. It's actually 105 when you actually do the math and break it out, because the value of having one or two is a lot, is very high. And then it's a lot, and that's a very steep part, right? So if you have a random shot at 101, that matters a lot more than the difference between, you know, 11 and 12, for example. That's a much flatter tier. You're getting really high upside shot. So you end up valuing the pick more. So yeah, so that's basically the way I think about it. So I do like those deals. And again, you want to make sure the league's going to exist, all those things. You want to have that stability. But yeah, I mean, I tend to like those because again, I wouldn't do it for huge asset guys, but I think the play to really do that with is a guy that kind of like a Damian Williams profile, right? You take a guy that was going outside the top 150 in a startup draft, and that the odds that they go, you know, for multiple seasons to help that pick are really low, and you can take the pick a couple years out. That's the play. The play is not, by the way, like Julio Jones. Like that is that is the worst way to do that deal, because the odds are that he's still going to help that pick be late. So that would sort of be the angle of which I would go about it. Yes, I think it's fine to do it, but you got to do it specifically and intentionally, and try and pick off a really high upside asset. That would be the way that I would do it.
There's a couple points I like to make about this. And the one thing that we're doing, we're playing Dynasty. So if you're looking and you're assuming that the league is going to last for more than a year or two, then you can start pushing out and go, okay, well, I'll buy that 2023 first. And then the next year, you're buying a 2024 first. So you're always a year ahead and you're accumulating an extra first every year. So that can be one of those advantageous things where if you're always a year out and always a year ahead, then when you come around, you always have two firsts, you know, and you can continue to do that if you're savvy and you're looking to work those angles where someone values current value, because eventually that current value catches up and you're still working with two firsts every year and you can still continue to do that. So it might eat you for the first couple of years where you give up an asset and you're holding a pick. But
real
then,
quick, Justin, I was just curious as you were saying that, are you not, I'm guessing you're not selling a guy for a 23 first though, that you would sell for a 21 first or maybe even a 22.
No, no, no. If I can get the earlier first, I'll take the earlier first. But a lot of times what you get is you get the discount on that further out first because it's so far out. You know, if I'm looking at something 2 years from now, I'm going to get the discount just because people are like, oh, that's 2 years from now. I'll worry about that later. Right. Well, I want to worry about it now because if I can buy that stock now that's going to mature in 2 years, okay. You know, I'm hoping I'm still alive in 2 years in the same way that I'm hoping that the league is still alive in 2 years. Right. If it's not, then, you know, whatever, screw the league. And, you know, I threw a couple years of. A couple years of entry fees away, but otherwise I'm down and I want to get assets that will accumulate over time. The other point I want to make is that I want to focus on first for more than 1 year out. If I'm going to buy 2022 picks, I'm fine with buying seconds, although I'm not really high on the class, just like Kelly said. But at the same time, if I want to buy a 2023 pick, I'm not going to invest in seconds right now. I'll invest in seconds next year when they're cheap. But right now, that's just too far out for me. I'm not going to give up an asset for a 2023 second and then hope that, you know, that pans out. Whereas I might have a shot at, you know, if I had a Damian Harris, okay, well, he hits and I get a first for him. You know, I'm not going to sell him for, you know, even if I got to sell him for 2024 first in next year or something like that. I'm not interested in buying seconds 2 years out. Seconds 1 year out, yes. But firsts I want every day, all day from anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, I definitely feel like I do discount the 23 first. And I think we kind of agree you should be discounting 23 first. It's kind of hard to define just how much. I mean, I know there's guys that, you know, I've been offered a first for or offered to sell for a 23 first or buy for a 23 first. I'm sorry. And even though I discount them, I'm just be like, I'm not trading a first for that guy, that kind of thing. So it's kind of hard to define. Sorry if we didn't do that exactly for you, Kelly, how big the discount should be, but definitely be discounting, but also be looking to acquire them if you can for the right player is basically, I guess, what we're saying.
Well, sell that aging running back for a 2023 first. You know, sell that Big Ben for a 2023 first, who this year might affect the pick in 2022, but might not be around to affect the 2023 pick. So
that's exactly the point.
Good point.
All of a sudden, that team is looking at a team where they've got one quarterback on their roster that's startable, and in 2022 they suck. You know, that's a kind of move that I'd like to make. Like, let me sell that aging quarterback. Let me sell Tom Brady, and even though he signs extensions, et cetera, I'll sell him for a 2023 first if I've got I've got a deep enough roster, and then maybe bank on that age cliff where he just falls apart, you know, because at some point it's going to happen, right? I mean, either that or the aliens are going to come back and get their brethren and bring them home. So,
and the one other aspect of this question, I don't think we've really got into. I'm curious your guys' thoughts. Whoever wants to answer is the idea of, and I think we would probably agree this, or anybody who's aware of upcoming classes. That he's specifically pointing out he doesn't love the 22-2 class and for that reason might be looking for 2023s. I don't particularly love the idea of doing that. I don't like to say that we know for sure what 2022 is going to look like or 2023. Guys that you like that are eligible in 2023 may not come out until 2024 for all you know. It's 2.5 years down the line. So I don't really like doing that. I'd always rather take the closer first, regardless of what we think the classes are going to be. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, you know, 2019 was supposed to be such a crappy class. And maybe past the first round it was. But in the first round, you had Kyler, Josh Jacobs, David Montgomery, who was a hit this year, Miles Sanders, Hawk, Metcalf, AJ Brown, Noah Fant. I mean, that's a loaded class. And even if you got Daniel Jones and you were able to, there was a huge sell window for him last offseason. I mean, that first round was as solid as any first round that you're going to find. And 2019 was supposed to be just a crappy class. There's always going to be first round value, which is why I say don't buy seconds until you get into that season before, because you can kind of get an idea of what we're looking at as you get 1 year closer. You know, if I'm looking at the 2022 class, I don't necessarily want the seconds from that class because it's not real deep, you know, looking at it right now. But who knows what's going to happen in 2023. So.
Yep. Okay. And we have a bunch of trades, so I do want to get to them. But I actually had a host question for Jordan, because I haven't heard him speak on it much. And I'm not sure if you're aware, Jordan, but I know Justin knows I've been very vocal about that. I like to wait on quarterbacks and super flex. I don't like to draft one early. I've heard you a lot. I listen to Football Guys. I've heard you on other podcasts, but I haven't really heard you lay out what, in terms of your data, has shown how you like to handle the quarterback position. So I'm just curious what you've seen and what you know, the kind of analytics that you've done on it show is the best optimum way to handle it.
Yeah, so I did this. I did a full super flex. It's like a quarter of the 2020 edition. And it's still all, you know, the thing about my writings and my books is that they're evergreen. So they're meant to be, you know, strategic, and it's not meant to be year specific. So that's basically essentially the textbook. And then you have to figure out how to apply it year to year. Generally speaking, there is a pretty enhanced value going in the first round. Again, this is the general rule, and I'll say specific on 2021 in a second. And then from like round two or three to like round seven, surprisingly flat. And I think that there's a couple of reasons for that. There tends to be guys that sort of get into that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 range that are underpriced, just because the market dumps on quarterbacks that look like Kirk Cousins, you know, or that look like Matthew Stafford, or, you know, and I'm just thinking years past, with that specifically, just because, you know, like I said, this year's a little bit different, but those guys tend to fall in a five, six, seven, eight range. That's actually pretty lucrative. So historically, I have been one to wait at quarterback for that reason. Again, it's very intentional, right? There's a handful of guys that I'm specifically targeting at specific price points to do that with, but that's really the play. This year it's different for me, because, I track real drafts, and it's great because you get to see as drafts move, and market values move, we'll be able to tell before, you know, you get any ADP data actually out. We're actually having, you know, real drafts sort of dictate that. And so what we're seeing consistently is that we're getting, essentially we're getting 8 guys in the first round, and then we're also getting Trevor Lawrence up there, you know, right around the end of the first round. That it's the 101 pick is what we're seeing. And so that's a whole different ball game. And the problem with it is if you don't go early, and if you're not in the top, if you're in the top 6 and don't go quarterback, you essentially have to assume that you're not going to get one on the comeback either, because Rodgers is probably going to be gone. And that's really the break point of like 205, 206 range is really where we're seeing Rodgers go. And if he's not there, then you're in a totally different world. So then you're in the Stafford, Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins range, right? But you have to be very specific, and you can't really miss. The problem with it this year, the problem why I have waiting this year, isn't so much that the quarterbacks are going high. It's that there's less security there than there has been in years past between, say, quarterback 12 and 20, right? We don't know what next year holds for Matt Ryan. We don't know what next year holds for Jared Goff, where in prior years, we had pretty good understandings of what they were. You know, Carson Wentz extended that tier out. Jalen Hurts did too. you know, he's another one that we don't really know. We have a whole bunch of questions about guys like Mayfield and Daniel Jones and all of these guys, Jimmy Garoppolo. In years past, we didn't necessarily have those same questions. We're sort of hitting a crescendo point where there's a lot of risk there. So I think the combination of all those things is making quarterbacks go early. I just did a startup draft this week where, you know, I said I've never gone super quarterback early, but I drew 102 and I said, you know, I'm going to try and do it. I'm going to try and trade up and see what happens. I made some very specific rules. I'm not going to give up a future first in the trade, but the difference between, you know, the best part about quarterbacks going early is that the third round of startup drafts looks strikingly similar. You know, the seventh round this year looks strikingly similar to third rounds in prior years, right? Guys like Amari Cooper and Mike Evans are sort of in that seventh round, which is crazy. So the drop off from there isn't that big. So I sort of use that knowledge and that leverage. And, you know, I moved up and took two quarterbacks. I took, Dak Prescott at 102 and then I took Deshaun Watson at 104, you know, as a different play to try it, just to try it this year, and see how it goes. But, I think that this year you get the high end elite assets up in the quarterback position. And I didn't pay a penalty for it. Honestly, I really don't think I paid a penalty for it.
It's very interesting, Jordan, because Rocky and I made a trade. We have a startup coming up. Rocky, when's this thing going to start?
End of March.
May? March, we got like 2 months
March
left.
31st. Calm down, Justin.
March 31st. Okay, so only like 9 weeks away. Got it. So we've had the draft order
set. Also known as 2.5 weeks away. But right, continue. Right, yeah.
We've had the draft order set for what? 2-3 weeks? A month?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been long enough that we're all itching. We got the shakes. You know, I'm sweating at night.
I wanted to let free agency play out some. Maybe I should have not let it play out some, and then somebody could have overdrafted A.J. Dillon because it wouldn't have been me. Right. But
so I'm on the early quarterback train as well. And, you know, we did the 100-yard dash, and I ended up picking the 105 spot. And then the market was set with, it was like the 107 and an eighth round pick for someone's second and third. And then I wake up at, you know, I generally wake up in the middle of the night at some point just for whatever reason for like 30 minutes. And I wake up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. I look down and check my email and go through, I got a little game I play. And so I do all that and I get to my email and there's a trade offer from Rocky, and it is the 108 and his sixth round pick for my second and third. So Rocky, you know what I did? What I did was I started looking at ADP and going, okay, what's the difference between a third and a sixth rounder? And is it enough to worry about me getting into that first tier quarterbacks? And I thought, nope, I'm out. You can have, cause I know what you're doing. You're hoarding all these second round picks. You're going to go over there and just smash running back because that's how you do. I know what's happening.
I don't always smash running back. I just smash non-quarterback value.
Right. So, but I mean, you did get some extra, you know, extra picks, but I didn't have to give up future first. And I've now moved into that same thing, Jordan, where I've got two of those top eight quarterbacks, which I consider the top tier. You know, it's everybody. And then after that, it's Russell Wilson, Joe Burrow, and then
it's interesting too, because in this startup, three guys, including Justin, have already traded. There's three guys who have six of the picks between 101 and 108, I believe.
Yeah. So there's going to be three guys with two stud quarterbacks.
And then everyone else.
Right. And scariness after that.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, I have, I think, five picks between 205 and 308 or something.
How many of those offers did you send? Did you send it to everybody in the league?
Four other people that same night. People. Yeah.
They didn't wake up quick enough.
I guess not.
Yeah. They weren't interested, but I was interested. So, and I actually considered sending that to you. And I told someone else I considered sending that same offer, but with my seventh rounder. With your seventh rounder. I mean,
I should have.
So I ended up getting your sixth rounder. So, you know, I was down. I didn't want to get the eighth rounder. Like, that's just too far of a gap.
Yeah, so you're saying I could have given you my seventh instead of my sixth.
You could have. But I was super interested, you know, getting the sixth round player and the third round play, because I consider – I'm calling the second a wash. I generally probably wouldn't take a quarterback unless Burrow dropped to, you know, 207 or whatever it was I had, which is unlikely, just because people hit the panic button when they realize that, you know, they're at the 110 and they don't have a quarterback. So they get to the 202 and the, or the 203 and they're like, oh, shit, I better do this now. So there was no way Burrow was going to get back to me, so I would have taken whatever. But now that I have the opportunity to get two stud quarterbacks, I'm down.
Yeah, I should have reached further. To be fair, I thought that eighth to the third was – I didn't know if anybody else in the league was going to do that. So.
I wouldn't have done that. That was that
seemed crazy,
offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm still willing to – I did it in TA9. I like the way my teams come out. I actually ended up with Jameis as potentially one of my starting – Jameis and Ben as my 2 and 3. Which definitely was iffy, but I'm liking it a lot better after the events of the last couple of days. So
it could look good for a year, and then who knows? You know,
yeah.
That's the.
Well,
that's
if
the
I have a title after that year, I'm fine having to figure it out afterwards.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, there's just there is a ton of value, non-quarterback value in the second and third guys that you would never get in the really second round in past years. It's ridiculous.
In
TA9, I got Swift and I drafted DK Metcalf and then traded him and AJ Brown and yeah. So
I mean, Alvin Kamara is a mid second now.
Alvin Kamara, yeah.
It's silly what's happening in the second round now. The second round looks like a late first in most in previous years.
Because yeah, and that TA9 draft, including some trades, I have Saquon and Barkley and AJ Brown. And I got Derrick Henry in the fourth. So
I've been looking at startups and I've done a couple and it's like, it's obscene how, I mean, the first eight picks are quarterbacks. It's almost universal. The first
eight
quarterbacks.
I've done
the 109 is selecting CMC, et cetera. You know?
Yeah. I've done two startups. I think one had 7 to start and one had 8 to start. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a bit of a overreaction and I understand that, but you know, I've been a QB and wide receiver person for a long time, so and I can find lots of wide receivers later on that I can make work. You know, I can make work.
That's why you might have seen me hitting running back. I don't know if you saw my TA19, but also I think in the other startup that we did together, me and Jerry hit a lot of running backs too.
Yeah, but
so.
You hammered. Didn't you do the same thing in that TA9 startup where you got all those second and third rounders?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. I remember. So someone else was talking about the trade, and I was like, I know what he's doing. You know, I know what he's doing. He's gonna smash running back in the second round. He's going to like 3 top 5 running backs and then, you know, piecemeal the quarterback position together for a year or two.
Yeah. As anybody who listens knows, that's what I generally tend to do. So, okay. So like I said, we have a ton of trades, and we're already pretty long here. So let's get into the trades. Let's go with the first one that I have on the list here, which is from TA1. Again, Trade Addicts Leagues, 12-team PPR Superflex, 1.75 tight end premium, 0.05 per return yard for all except TA1, which we have to say because there is a TA1 trade on here, even though that's not going to factor in at all. So this was actually me and Russ done this afternoon, which was Stephon Diggs for Dobbins and Gus Edwards. So, Jordan, what do you think of that one?
I'd take the dig side. My question about Dobbins is what's his ultimate ceiling? I have him going dead smack next to each other. So I've got him, I've got 12 drafts this month. So basically almost one a day. And so we've got Diggs at 302. And Dobbins at 303. So they're right next to each other in valuation. I think that if I go wide receiver early, it gives me more options. I wonder what the ultimate upside on Dobbins is. Is it like, you know, 1400 yards and like 40 catches? Like it almost looks like a Nick Chubb, like a lighter version of Nick Chubb. And if it's not that, right, there's some concern there. So that's really the concern. I would take Diggs over Dobbins because I think it more facilitates my team build as well.
And Russ will be very happy to hear you say that because he got Diggs. He's been trying to get Diggs from me ever since I got into TA1 and we did the dispersal. But
everyone that listens knows that Russ was getting Diggs.
Yeah, that's true. Russ is selling running backs and loves Stephon Diggs.
The TA league I'm in it with, I wish, because I do have Diggs, I wish he wasn't trying to rebuild. Because, come it, man, I could build the rest of my team around that one draft, you know, that one trade. So,
yeah. My thinking was, I don't know what to do with this team. It's in that weird area where I don't think it's. I'm not even sure it's in the middle, but I don't think it's I'm not sure it's a true top three team either. But it could be four or five. So maybe that is the middle, but. And I don't really know what to do with it. So Russ offered this. I think I added Gus Edwards into it. He offered it straight up and, he accepted it. So I just wanted to do, something to mix it up a little. I thought it was fairly close, for what it's worth. I think Dobbins is almost a round ahead in DLF ADP. And I do think, he might be easier to sell if I decide to go that route later on, because like I said, I'm not sure exactly what this team is that I took over. But Justin, do you have any preference for either side?
Yeah, I prefer the dig side, but it really comes down to what do we view as Dobbins' ceiling. And I don't know that 1,400 yards and 40 catches is reasonable, given that Lamar Jackson doesn't check down. He just would rather run. So in that scenario, I mean, I think we're looking at, you know, something like 1,100 or 1,200 yards and, you know, 25 catches, which is solid, but I don't know. I just think that if I'm competing, I think I can get more out of Diggs in my lineup than I can Dobbins.
You know? Yeah, and that's the whole thing. I'm not even sure if I'm competing. Like I said, I have no idea what to do with that team. So yeah. I just figure what the hell, Russ, and I'll accept it. We can talk about it on the show. So, let's go to the next one. A lot of big names in these trades. TA5, Justin Jefferson for Ridley, Thielen, and the 301, Justin.
Pulling on my heartstrings here. Gosh, I want to say Jefferson, but I'm going to say the Ridley side because I think Thielen can have another year or two of wide receiver 2-3 relevance. And Ridley is going to – I don't know. I just think that Ridley is going to be a solid wide receiver 1 for the next 3 or 4 years.
I'm with you. And Russ, I love Ridley. Jefferson was amazing this year, but we don't know that this year is what he's going to do every year. That was a really, really good year. And you're getting a year or two out of Thielen. But I think Ridley and Jefferson could be close over the next few years. So
yeah.
I'll take the Thielen and the 301. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, it's interesting on the Ridley side. He's been better than I thought he was going to be coming into the NFL. And actually is probably a value now. It's one of those weird situations where I get a player that is, where I am lower than the market on. And then I find myself 2 years later being, you know, him being better than I thought. And I'm somehow higher than the market on, which is interesting. I don't know. I think, of all of the guys that are on the, you know, 1 or 2 years in the league scale, that have a claim for for wide receiver 1, I think Justin Jefferson's the best case. So I would probably take him. I see the other side of it. I think you're clearly getting the best player in the deal. And so that would be sort of why I would do it. But I don't, it's not something that, you know, I have the scale of urgency, you know, this isn't a knock your toddler over running to accept type of urgency deal. So I could tinker with this and probably make it a little bit better if I was getting Jefferson, I would think.
Okay. So, and then we got 4 TAA trades and shout out to Tyler Karp. I think he might've been involved in every single one of these. So,
right.
who was on the pod a couple weeks ago. This next one is also, involves me. It's Mike Evans and a 22 second for 111 and a 22 first. Jordan, how about that one?
Mike Evans.
Thank you. That's my side. Yeah. And that league, I do think I have a good enough team to compete. And yeah, I think he offered it just the 2 firsts and, I added the second in there and he still accepted. Justin, what do you think?
This is criminal what's happening to Mike Evans. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's got his quarterback lined up for the next couple of years. That was one of the one of the scary things apart about his future was who was going to be his quarterback after a year or two. Well, Brady's going to be around, whether he's good or not. The volume will probably be there. Mike Evans has shown that he is seven straight
1,000-yard seasons to start his career.
And it's not like he doesn't score touchdowns. He's a big guy in the end zone, and he uses his body well. You know, he's grooving up on them cornerbacks and bumping them out the way. Come on, man. Come on. Give me Mike Evans. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty happy with this one. And yeah, the other narrative, too, was that Brady wasn't going to be able to get it to Evans. Brady's too old, can't throw deep, all that stuff. He did just fine last year. So, yeah.
He's a daggone alien.
Okay. So we got a few more here. Let's try and finish this out. Brandon Ayuk for Cole Kmet, 207 and a 22 first. Jordan, what do you think of that one?
I hate giving up future picks, but give me Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, I just think when you look at his year, it's a pretty rare year for a first round guy. Missed a couple of games, but the efficiencies are right where we like to see. Good production in not a great situation. I like Cole Kmet, but I think he fits a little bit more in the replacement level of the position than he does true difference maker. And you know, if you're going to get what's going to be a top 15 wide receiver, like it's going to be tough to beat that with whatever that future pick is. So give me Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah. I've talked about this before on the show. I'm still a little unsure about Ayuk. I get why you like him. Between the other targets there, the quarterback situation, it's just a little shaky for me. And with the first, and a second, and Cole Kmet, I think I'd probably lean that side just because I'm not as high on Ayuk. I get he did well last year and everything, but he just scares me a little bit. I with a healthy Debo, a healthy Kittle, and with Jimmy Garoppolo, that's the thing for me. And which will not be the case probably next year in 2022, if not 2021, I'm sure I'll have another quarterback. I just worry about the target share. But Justin, any thoughts on that one before we move to the next trade?
Yeah, the with and without Kittle splits are gross. They're bad. So without Kittle, he averaged 80 yards on 10.5 targets a game. Whew, 10.5 targets a game without Kittle. And then when Kittle was healthy, 5.5 targets, 58 yards. I mean, those on-off splits are just gross. I'm out on Kittle. I mean, I'm out on Ayuk because I don't think that Kittle's going to miss 8 games every year. You know, he's a tight end, so he's liable to get injured at some point, but 1 or 2 games, whatever. So give me the commit and the pick. I mean, just easy money for me.
And this next one ties into our listener question from earlier. Odell Beckham for a 23 first, Justin.
This is me just hurting right now because I've been an Odell Beckham truther for so long. Jordan, I want to hear yours because I don't know. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Odell?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because you could see this player not helping that pick at all. I just think it's pretty unlikely that we've seen the last of him. And so when you look at it, I have something that I mentioned earlier that I track called, I call density. And that's basically once you hit, how deep is your hit? And, you know, basically how long is the hit and how significant is it? So he's got 4 hits on his resume, 4 top 24 seasons. He got 3 top 12s. And so when you look at that, that is a 72.2% odds based on the fact that he's a first round guy going forward. Granted, he is about a year and a quarter behind the pace of that average. But, you know, so that's the interesting thing there in terms of when you look at it, 50, based on what you know, basically 50% of the guys that have had 3 hits as first round guys, go on to have 2 more top 12 hits. So there is some upside to his profile there that's not really baked into the price. I think you're getting a discount. I'd take the Odell Beckham side because I think you have some pretty significant upside. So that would be my thought.
I appreciate you bringing me back to earth because, and I actually bought Odell last season while he was injured because, I mean, I don't know that he's the 1,300 yard guy, but he could be a 1,000, 1,100 yard guy easy. And if I'm projecting, you know, getting a random 2023 first, man, I think I have to take Odell.
It's funny because I mentioned earlier, I think even more than you two, too, I probably devalue 23 first. But, and I also an Odell Beckham truther for the longest time, Justin, but I also devalue Odell Beckham. So I've just been, after the injury last year, I've just kind of been out. He didn't produce the first year in Cleveland. Other than one game last year, he wasn't really producing last year. And and the other thing about this too is that, you know, I value production more than most, you know, as opposed to just the dynasty value, that a lot of people prioritize, even I think more than fantasy points a lot of the time. But I think you're losing both here. I don't expect a ton of production. I think I can get Odell Beckham production for less than any first. And I also, I don't see it coming. And he's going to be a 28-year-old receiver coming off a major – 29, yeah, coming off a major leg injury. His value's never going to rebound. So you're losing value. Yeah, and I don't have faith in the production. So I would be taking the 23 first. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, value-wise, you're never going to recoup anything off of Odell versus a, you know, future first. Like the first is only – it only can go up from here. I mean, literally can only go up. And Odell likely doesn't. I mean, unless he throws up 1,400 yards and 9 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns, he's not going to be a guy that rebounds either.
Yeah, but, and I'm totally the guy that if I had more faith in the production, I would gladly send a 23 first. I just don't.
Yeah. And it's kind of shocking. This is like this is backwards shit right here. So I'm just saying. Sorry, Russ.
Okay, so we'll get to our last trade on the sheet here, which was Alvin Kamara for Antonio Gibson, Chase Claypool, and a 2022 second. I can speak from experience that Alvin Kamara is not easy to trade right now, and I think this is a pretty decent return for him. What do you think, Jordan?
Give me Kamara. I'm not really buying Chase Claypool as being this high-end dynasty asset. So that's where I differ on this. Like, I like Gibson, but Kamara has pretty rare upside outcomes, which we saw last year. And, you know, that is not on the other side of this deal. So that's my thought on it.
Actually, I am kind of with you there because I'm not sold on Claypool either or Gibson. I mean, they're obviously valuable pieces, but I think the market is higher on both of them than I am. I would probably take the Kamara side. I'm just saying I've seen it's very hard to deal Kamara, and I don't know that it's hard to get much more than this if you're intent on moving him. And I think Tyler in this case was because he's very looking to get out on older running backs.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that like these deals where that's just something that I looked at this in Analytics of Dynasty this year, and it's something I just don't. I think is like trying to predict future value. Like we can do it a little bit, but we tend to get to this point where we sell these guys too early. I think ultimately, I mean. I don't know. We rushed to the door on Alvin Kamara, and then we kind of rushed to the door. You know, we're burying Michael Thomas, right? Who tried to play on an injured leg. He needed surgery. It was like a hockey injury where he needed surgery the day after the season was over. I mean, because he was trying to get a ring. Like we buried these guys a little bit too early. And so that's sort of my thought on this. Like I don't know. We rush to the door, and it probably creates value on the buy side of guys like Kamara.
I'm totally with you there. Like I said, I think I tend to value the production of these guys more than the dynasty value, the, you know, the ascending value or things like that more than most people do. And I'm fine if I have to slightly on the back end trade a guy or something like that. I'd rather get the extra year of production and take a little less value in return when I trade them than you know, it's ridiculous that we're trying to get out on receivers at like 27 at this point because they're approaching 30 at 27. So, right. I'm with you there. So Justin, thoughts on this one before we finish up?
Yeah, I think this is an entirely different trade from the last one we discussed, where if you acquire Odell Beckham, you're just basically assuming you're going to have him through the offseason and you're going to be playing him in your lineup this season. For this one, I think I would take the Gibson-Claypool side and then make some more moves, you know, and acquire more assets. And I think likely you can move those two for a DeAndre Swift kind of thing, you know, and then you, to me, you've reset the clock. And you get an equally valuable asset from Kamara, and you end up with the second. So to me, I take the trade, and then I'm working the trade. I'm working the phones, and I'm trying to see what I can get out of those two players. Because I'm not in on either of those two, to be honest with you, Gibson or Claypool. But the people are. I speak to the people.
That's a really good point. I think Tyler had pulled this trade after he did it, and some people were saying they'd rather have Gibson over Kamara in the thread, on the Twitter thread.
That's so insane, right?
That is insane.
Yes. But to Justin's point, then you sell Gibson for –
You only have to find that one guy. If you need 8.5% of your league mates – or 8% of your league mates, whatever, 8.2, to want Gibson more than Kamara, and you turn a profit automatically.
Yeah. So, that's a really good point.
My only thought, like, I get that in principle, and this is where I think a little bit like the dynasty market, we have to be a little bit careful about, like, the stock market mentality, is because it's not a liquid market.
No, right?
Like, this isn't a liquid market. Like, this is 11 guys, and especially if you're in a group of, like, I joke about this, but like, if you had taken the, ADP from Analytics of Dynasty subscribers at the past couple of years, like, it's going to look vastly different than what it looks like at other places. And so it's not a liquid market for guys like Madison would have been higher and Dylan would have been higher. And like, it's not a liquid market, because especially in a league like this, where you sort of know the general sphere of who's playing in it, right? Like, I don't know. And I think the other side of it too is it can be a really, really dangerous game to trade for guys that you don't like, because in theory you can trade them, right? In theory you can do those things, but I think in practice it can be a lot tougher. So I just caution on that, right? I get your point, but I think it can be a little bit dangerous to do that.
I think for me, I worry about that more with mid-tier assets than I do with top three round assets, with, you know, an Antonio Gibson kind of guy, because I think it's easier to trade those high-end young assets. Now, when you get into aging players, I mean, the whole moving CMC and moving, you know, Alvin Kamara and Dalvin Cook, that's impossible because they're 24, 25 years old and people are scared to death. But when you have a 22-year running back, it really is easy to move those guys. And I don't assume that I'm going to get, you know, Kamara plus for Gibson. But I think with getting Kamara and Claypool, and then I have the second as a sweetener, I think I can move back into that Kamara tier and still have that second, you know, in my pocket. That's kind of what I would assume and hope for, especially as I get closer to the season. I mean, people are going to start getting just, you know, they're going to get frisky, and you know, they're going to want to just dance on the tables and whatever.
Yeah. To me, the Gibson love seems a bit out of control. Although I do hear what Jordan's saying. I'm never a guy who likes to trade for guys I don't like.
Right.
Even thinking, you know, I have the same mentality too. Like I said, even when I made the Diggs move, I was thinking that if I need to, I can probably trade Dobbins later this year for maybe more than I can trade Diggs for. Bob in the chat says, in a dispersal, should I bid James Robinson up over 10% of my budget? We're in a kitchen sink dispersal together, which I have no friggin' idea what I'm – I don't know if either of you – but I have no clue what I'm doing. But
hey, Bob, I'm assuming that the dispersal is full of crap players. Bid 10% or plus. Go ahead. Because dispersals generally have bad teams. So that means the assets are limited anyway. Get your guy, whatever.
Yeah, it's not great. There's a handful of decent guys, but it's not great. But anyway, yeah, so I'm with Jordan. Definitely be a little cautious about trading for guys you don't like. But it's also good, though, to be thinking ahead, the next trade after this trade. So both points are valid. So that, I think, as Russ would say, is the end of our show sheet.
Hey, whoa, what? We got some breaking news.
Oh, what happened?
You guys ready for this? This is going to be right up your alley, Rocky. Ryan Fitzpatrick has signed with the Washington football team.
I love it.
That's actually, an ideal
That's
spot.
That's a starting quarterback.
It could legit be. I mean,
I have Ryan Fitzpatrick
in like every league you own, probably. Yeah.
I have three quarterbacks in TA1, and one of them's Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I'm pretty happy.
That's kind of a big deal for Ryan Fitzpatrick owners.
That's a starting spot, probably.
At least for a few weeks, if they don't choose, even if they take a QB in the first round.
They'd have to probably trade up to do that. They're in the 20s. Maybe
like a Mac
they?
Jones type or something. I don't know.
Does Mac Jones even last till 21 or wherever the Redskins are drafting at?
Exactly. That's true. They somehow back in the playoffs. That's a, Fitzpatrick on the Washington football team. Hey, there's you a super flex starter for, another 8 to 10 weeks at least.
Any thoughts on Fitz to WFT, Jordan, before we finish up?
That's great news for him. Like, I was joking earlier this offseason, and like, I was joking, but I wasn't like, it wasn't that far off from being honest, honestly true, which was that the Washington football team, like the San Francisco 49ers, went to the Super Bowl with basically a front four that was pretty ferocious and Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback. Like that Washington football team with a quarterback kind of has a very similar type of profile to it. That's fascinating, right? That's really interesting. That's great. I'm excited for that because Ryan Fitzpatrick's so much fun to watch. Like that'll be.
I'm just excited that Ryan Fitzpatrick is likely going to be a starter for another year in the league.
Because like 6 days ago, he was apparently retired.
Retire.
But I got to give a shout out to Travis, and I'm sorry if I butcher your name, Travis Rezitar, in the Cool Kids Club, because I get all these notifications. Today is the day to keep my phone like handy for all the notifications, and Fitzmagic is alive is what he says. So thanks, Travis.
Yeah, it's a 1 year deal with $10 million worth $10 million could grow to $12 million with incentives. Sounds like he's starting.
Sounds like a Ryan Fitzpatrick 1 year deal that we see every year.
Yeah.
I mean, good
and God. They don't have a threat to him, right? Like this isn't a situation where like there's not a readily apparent player that's a threat to him.
No.
Yeah. And they don't have an easily draftable rookie, I said, either. Yeah. They're picking late in the first.
This isn't a Tua situation. This isn't
the only quarterback on the roster is Heineke. They had to do something. This is a massive – for Washington, it's a massive upgrade for their team. For Terry McLaurin, oh, my gosh.
I was just thinking that, too. I love McLaurin.
Guys, I got to get off the pod.
He often likes the target. Yeah, he
I got to take a cold shower. This is going to get bad for me. I'm wiping it. I don't know what's going on.
It's magic. Lives on another year.
Oh, Terry McLaurin. My heart is beating so fast.
But again, that is the end of our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. So Jordan, before I get to all our business here, do you want to just, remind everybody who you are and where they can, what you do and where they can find what you do?
Yeah, you can find all of my work at, analyticsofdynasty.com. You can go find the 2021 edition, over there. I'll just say there was a note in the comments, I just saw it. Someone was surprised about Everett over Janu. All you got to do is look at their production to date. It's exactly the same. So just a note on that. There's that. But analyticsofdynasty.com, you can get the 2021 edition. I actually have up a bundle of the 2020 and the 2021 edition together. I think the best way to consume Analytics of Dynasty content is through that. And then I actually have a subscription service as well. So I do Dynasty Daily Podcast at Analytics of Dynasty. You can get a booking included. If you go subscribe over there with that. And yeah, I've got the real draft position tracker. I got some more fun goodies coming out in the next couple weeks here as well. So all stuff to get you ramped up. Dynasty Daily Podcast. When I get off with you guys, I got to go record the reaction for the day. So this will be fun. So, but yeah, so you can find all that and follow me on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for coming on, Jordan. It's a really good time talking to you and Justin. But just to finish up here, just a reminder to everybody, I am Rocky Petrella at Dynasty FF Addict. Justin's at Run DFF. You can follow Trade Addicts at Trade Addicts Pod. Follow the DAP Network at DAP _ Network. Please make sure you're subscribed, rating, and review to all three. Also, we have the shirts in the store, ffpodshirts.storeenvy.com. All kinds of shirts you can get in there, fantasy football related. All the DAP Network shows, Trade Addicts, Timeline, Dynasty Junkies, Get Real with Casey Kasem. I know there's some others, Dynasty Vipers, Fantasy Intervention. Russ could run through all of them. I can't remember them all off the top of my head. But just, so, and all the proceeds to that, go to, charity that me and Russ pick, every other month, I think it is. And this for the next couple months is No Kid Hungry. So it's all going to a great cause. Like I said, just make sure you are subscribing to the DAP Network, subscribe to Trade Addicts Pod, and, hopefully I didn't forget anything, because that's all I can think of. So good night, Jordan. Good night, Justin.
Good night, Rocky.
Good night, Jordan. Good night. Thanks for having me.